to another edition of Pitt Bulletin Legal News Radio, part of the Pitt Bulletin Legal News Network. Broadcasting each Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the show covers the latest pit bull news across the country, including breed-specific legislation, the real story behind recently reported dog attacks, fact-checking on dogsbite.org, litigation updates, and a live call-in discussion. Call 646-595-4137 or join us in chat during the show.
Welcome to Pit Bulletin Legal News Radio, February 10th, 2015. I'm your host, Fred Cray, with my co-host, Chris Brownsugar Diaz from Stop ESL, along with the rest of the PBLN crew. Tonight, we're going to be talking about breed discriminatory laws as a ballot issue. Is it a good idea? And with that, we'll be talking to Nancy Tranzo from Colorad Dogs. Is that right, Chris?
Yes, Colorad Dogs.
Okay.
Because we're rad and in Colorado.
That's right. And we'll also, of course, discuss the Miami-Dade experience. And so that will be the topic of discussion in the at 8:30. In the meantime, we're all here to talk about the news and what's going on in the world today. And, you know, that's related to pit bulls. And so with having said that, you can chat with Denise in the chat room. Denise, are you there?
I sure am. How are you tonight?
I'm good tonight. Of course, all of our listeners want to know any change in your marriage plans.
Still a go.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll check with you. We'll check with you at halftime. And
okay.
We'll have a Pepsi ready for you. And we'll see how you're doing at halftime. In the meantime, if you want to chat with Denise, ask questions or relay information, you go to the Blog Talk Radio link, log in with the chat dialog box, use your Facebook credentials, and you're ready to roll, chat, and talk about bridal gowns and locations and the music and the band and, you know,
the
registry.
The all-important invitations?
Yes,
meetings.
The registry, yes. All these things are important. And, you know, the vows, you got to discuss the vows. Are they going to be, you know, just I do? Or are they going to say things, you know, that are specifically for that couple? Or are you going to thank your parents? Or are you going to, how's it going to work? You know, you got to.
Jeez, now I'm stressed out. Now I'm calling it off. All things being to
see, I think the most important part is knowing which relatives not to sit at the same table together.
Well, I've been married 45 times, so I've been through this many times. If you need some advice about that, I can tell you that. But what's always interesting is when one of the people's, your wife's father wants to bring his girlfriend and the wife's mother wants to come too. That's always an exciting time. If you want, that's always, you know, some element of excitement is always involving not just the two people. The two people could get married like that, but it's all the stuff surrounding that. And there's always something going wrong. And what's interesting is you're the only person that knows it, so you're the one fretting about, we don't have, in my last wedding, we didn't have the forks for the cake. My father comes over to him and he goes, you know, people are getting restless about the cake. You gotta have the cake. Dad, we don't have any forks. And he goes, how can you not have any forks? And the place where we had it, you had to bring everything. There was no place there. You had to bring your own forks, your own everything. So the guy had to, like, go back to his place and get the forks. So nobody knew that, but it was, Denise, I'm sure you'll find that there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that nobody knows about, but only you. And remember that you're the only one that knows that your dress is on backwards.
That's true, all me.
So are you excited? I always wondered, you know, how you felt, whether you felt, because this is what this show is going to be about, is about your wedding plans.
Decided to
just change topics for the entire show. But are you excited? Are you a little bit, you know, some people say, you know, well, I'm not going to get cold feet because I've already made the decision. But, you know, we all know those people who get there and they go, you know, I'm getting cold feet. So are you excited or are you, you know, a little bit nervous or what?
I'm excited, and we're not, I guess I'm an unconventional bride in that I'm not looking for, like, the formal wedding. I don't want any, I don't even have, the other day I was at a party and someone goes, well, what's your colors? What are the bridesmaids going to be wearing? And I'm like, whatever they want. I didn't know that you have to have colors.
So we're having new bridesmaids?
Yes, basically.
I'm there.
All right, I know you're the guest of honor.
That's right. I'll be catching the. There won't be any garter belt to catch. Everybody's going to be naked.
That's unconventional. It's just going to be a laid back party, basically. You know, and in the next.
Are you going to allow pot smoking at your wedding?
Sure, whatever you want.
Okay, because you know there should be like a little like tent, you know, or. A little special grounds, because you don't want everybody to get a contact high.
Oh, okay. Is that what
yeah, I'm going to call. I'm going to call Bill Maher and ask him about that.
Oh, I see.
Because he knows all about that kind of thing.
He does know all about that. He'll probably.
And you could also invite Zach Galifianakis, who smoked pot on Bill Maher's show one time.
The show? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. It was everybody was freaked out. He had an actual joint. And he said to the people on the panel, you know, whoever those guys are, you want to hit? And, like, everybody was like, we're on television. It's a real joint. We're not touching that. You keep it to yourself. Don't even put it in my direction. Even if I smoke pot every day, I wouldn't do it right now. I don't know. So, all right. Well, I'm glad that we covered all those issues with you, Denise. And we'll be checking in.
Yes, very important issues.
Yes, we'll be checking in with you at halftime to see if you've made any further decisions on whether flip-flops are allowed, for example, or not.
Okay.
All right. So it's time for our Chris Stop BSL Brown Sugar Diaz pop quiz.
Previously on Pitt Bulletin Legal News Radio.
So who are we having on next week? You know this.
Next week, I don't.
Yes, you do. You do know this. You told me. No, not us.
Who are we having on next week? I know who we're having on in 2 weeks.
Who's that?
We're going to talk to Deirdre.
Right. That's what I meant.
But that's not next week. That's on the 24th, not the 17th.
Okay. Well, at least you got the date straight. And we want to advertise that her model call is going on now.
Yes, the 2016 Pinups for Pitbulls calendar model call is open right now, so people can apply for women can apply for themselves. Women and men can apply for a dog, or a woman can apply for herself and a dog to be together. So you have multiple options there to be able to apply to be in the calendar. And all the information and the questionnaire and everything that needs to be filled out are all on the Pinups for Pitbulls website. So you can go there and apply. It's a lot of fun and a great process. And, you know, it's an amazing experience.
And you ought to know because?
Because we got to do it last year with Juno.
Yay!
Juno is Miss February. She is your Pinups for Pitbulls calendar dog for this month.
It's very exciting. I have her up right now.
Yes, she's very cute in her little pink bandana. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely great. The only thing that would make it better is if you were a pinup, which I was very hoping when I turned to February. I thought, yeah. And then I thought, oh, Chris isn't there. It's just Juno.
No, yes, my husband was disappointed about that as well. He thought that I should have applied for
the
two
have.
Of us together.
Yeah, you should have. But there's no stopping you now. You could do it for this year.
I could. I don't know that I'm going to. I'm not comfortable in front of a camera.
I see. You'd rather be behind the camera.
Yes, or on radio.
Okay.
Radio works for me.
Okay. And how are your pet portraits going, Chris? Yes.
They're doing great. I started doing portraits of people's cats and dogs, and it's kind of amazing how much they've taken off. I'm very touched by the response that I've gotten from them.
When you say taken off, you mean that the dogs are naked?
For the most part.
They're taken off? Well, I think the one that you did of my soulmate, Barney, was caught his – his very impish nature that he has, you know. Especially
yeah,
he
has just this look.
Yep. So, if you want a pet portrait, you can talk to Chris. We're going to have one as a. We're going to use some of her talents for a prize in our upcoming contest, whatever that is that we think of. So check out her. What's the name of your Facebook page?
It's Winged Paws Pet Portraits.
Okay, so. So that's pretty cool. And I have to say that I didn't know you were that much of a drawer. I knew you were a glass worker, but I didn't know that you could draw as you know to the extent that you can. So congratulations.
I have skills. I have
yes,
mad
you do.
Skills, Fred.
You do. And so now we're going to put on some of your mad skills to work. I think people were expecting the news, but no, we're switching it around tonight. We're going to have the BSL report first, or BDL report. There. So can we say definitively that the Mississippi bill has died on arrival?
Yes, the Mississippi bill is dead. No more concerns about that this year. The deadline was February 3rd for the House committee to hear bills and to be able to move them forward. So that deadline has come and gone, and the bill is officially dead. No, you know, it cannot move forward like at all this year. So there's no concerns there at this point.
Well, that's good. So what other breed discriminatory law news do we have this week?
Well, we have a couple of municipal level activities. The first thing is we have Springfield, Missouri. Springfield, Missouri has on the agenda, they are discussing their law that targets pit bulls.
They were supposed to discuss
in an interesting move, the mayor had decided that he wasn't going to allow public comment on this particular agenda item, which is strange.
I think about that. I thought we lived in a democracy.
Yes.
I guess not.
Yeah,
not.
And they, you know, they say that officials said that, you know, they have the authority to limit content, to limit public speaking content to issues that only have, I guess, quote unquote, new information. Considering that this was on the agenda officially and for the first, I believe this was for the first time it was on the agenda officially, you know, recently. And, you know, that would qualify it for public comment, considering that it is actually an agenda item and not just people discussing it, you know, without context. But, you know, they claim that they are allowed to do it. Obviously, people are quite a bit upset that they're not allowed to have their voices heard concerning a legitimate and official agenda item.
They have a right to be concerned. It's part of the democratic process.
And I sort of wonder if maybe there isn't something, you know, if they don't actually have the power to do that, you know, if there is some sort of...
I agree that they're... That should be looked into.
Yeah,
the county attorney or the city attorney said in the news that they did have the power to do it, and the mayor does do this on occasion. But just because the city attorney says it doesn't make it so.
Yes,
so,
we've heard city attorneys say that you know laws are constitutional when they aren't.
We have. Yes, we have. So I think I think it's called the Springfield Bully Alliance. I would definitely look at the open meeting laws as they apply in Springfield, Missouri, to see if they're allowed to do that, and if so, under what circumstances. It just seems like it gives the mayor too much discretion to quash anything that he would disagree with.
Yes, and you know, if it wasn't on the agenda, I could see, you know, limiting speakers to agenda items, but there really is. There's no actual reason for not allowing comment in this particular occasion. except for the fact that he just doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want people to, you know, be able to voice their opinions about it, which is extremely unfortunate and, you know, sounds vaguely illegal to me.
It's downright, but it's downright undemocratic.
Yes. So our second municipal level issue is a town whose name I'm going to butcher, and I'm very sorry about that.
But in a loving way.
Yeah. Mishawaka, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
It's close to South Bend, and as we know, South Bend, Indiana, last year put a lot of time and effort into changing their breed discriminatory law in addition to everything else in their
right.
animal control ordinance, and beefing it up and making a really great ordinance, which they then passed, repealing their breed discriminatory law. Because of that, Mishawaka is looking pretty much to do the same thing. They're revamping their animal control ordinance and tackling everything, including their breed discriminatory law, which, you know, targets pit bulls and preemptively labels all of them dangerous. So they are working on that at the moment. They're, you know, crafting this ordinance. It may be a situation where it takes a long time, like what we saw with South Bend, because they are doing a comprehensive overhaul. Or they might, you know, take a look at South Bend because officials did discuss that town specifically and the work that they had done there. So they may look to their ordinance as a model, which would be a very good idea considering the amount of attention that they put into that ordinance.
Yep.
It's an impressive piece.
Yes.
So those are our municipal level issues. We have a bunch of state level action. We have
some action. Go ahead.
We have in Washington, we have House Bill 1018, and that would prohibit breed discriminatory laws. That is going to the House Judiciary Committee. We have the Connecticut HB 5361, which is addressing insurance discrimination. And you know, those bills are traditionally very, very hard to pass because the insurance companies have a lot of lobbyists and a lot of power, and they don't like regulations.
The lobbyists. Yeah, they have the...
This is my question. If there's this crazy, powerful, widely funded pit bull lobby, why can they not out-lobby the insurance industry?
Yeah, that's a good question. But I will say this, that the insurance companies... I mean, they are the second-tier power in America. I mean,
absolutely.
When you talk about insurance, you're not just talking about dog bite insurance. You're talking about health insurance. You're talking about car insurance. You're talking about, you know, all the insurances that you can have. So it's not. I don't know that there's any group that can outdo the insurance company lobbyists. So. I guess Pennsylvania did it, was able to pass one of those bills.
Yep, Pennsylvania has, but Pennsylvania's is a little bit limited. It's not, it doesn't prevent differential rates.
Right.
So insurance companies are allowed to charge you a lot more for, having
per dog.
Yeah. There's ways that they can sort of get around it, but they can't cancel your policy based off solely off the breed of your dog. So, which is a great thing because people have that happen to them all the time where they don't have an issue when they get their policy and, you know, then they turn around and say, they do one of their drive-by inspections or whatever and see your dog and,
That does segue into the news in some way because the Sacramento Bee had an article in their newspaper, that pit bulls have been denied insurance, and they had agents from different companies say, "Yeah, we're not covering pit bulls in California." State Farm, though, said that they would cover pit bulls in California, and they only asked two questions: "Is your dog ever trained to attack, and has it ever bitten anyone?" And then they will cover it. So, I don't know if that's all across the country, but in California.
State Farm has a national policy of not discriminating based on the breed of the dog.
Yeah, so So in Sacramento, they're having this breed, insurance breed discrimination issue, and it's so bad that it got in the paper, and people were complaining about it. And almost every insurance company except State Farm was saying, we're not covering it. So, that is a problem, and it's one that I think the only way it'll change is if there's a law like they have in Pennsylvania of that type that prevents that kind of discrimination, because they're just going to say, hey, big dogs, big injuries, we're not covering them.
Yes. And, they like to make the insurance conversation strictly about pit bulls, particularly the pro-BSL groups.
Yeah,
but this is not, in no way, shape, or form, just a pit bull issue. You know, this affects Rottweilers and Dobermans and Huskies and all
Shepherds.
Sorts of dogs. I mean,
yep.
Large sort dogs. Of amazing list.
Yeah. All right. So I had to get that. I had to, try to make that relevant. So go back to what you were talking about, which was the BSL you were talking about.
State bills that we have going in there. We have a bill in Kentucky, Senate Bill 124, which would prohibit breed discriminatory laws at the state level. We have, it's kind of amazing, actually, how many bills there are at this point. Montana, SB 239, would also prohibit breed discriminatory laws at the state level. We have a bill in New York that would, New York has tried this insurance discrimination bill pretty much every year.
Yeah.
And there is another one, it's Assembly Bill 3696 and Senate Bill 487. So there's that one as well to try to prohibit insurance companies from discriminating based on the breed of the dog. And then the last one would be Arizona. Is Senate Bill 1292, and that also would prohibit breed discriminatory laws at the state level.
All right, so we're moving.
So we
on
have there. We have a lot of states that are discussing it this year, and this is I think we've reached a point where we're just going to see more and more until eventually, hopefully, all 50 states will prohibit them.
And then we'll be off the air.
It would be a great day if we could just like be like, hey, there's no more breed discrimination. So,
yeah.
But I don't see it happening anytime soon, but we're getting there. We are getting
yeah.
there.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do a touch of news. There was, I think, one thing slightly related to what you were talking about, which is Des Moines, Iowa repassed their breed discriminatory laws, making pit bulls high risk, which is basically putting them, making them automatically have to be restricted. And it was expected that would happen. I was talking to a lawyer there who's been involved in lawsuits against Des Moines about this whole thing, and we'll see how all that turns out. But it was not unexpected that they would vote. It was 6-1. It was very perfunctory. They didn't really listen to anything that anybody had to say. They just voted, and that was it. In Newark, Ohio, several people went out for a prayer vigil to protest, to try and to get the city council's attention, because they want their dogs to be they want breed neutral legislation there to be passed. And I guess they're going to vote on that next Tuesday. Two dogs were involved in fires. One was a boxer named Carmen in Cincinnati who laid on her father while the place was burning to protect him. The father died. The dog is now on a ventilator, but looks like he might recover. There was also another dog in a fire, Angel, who happened to also be 9 years old. Who was in a mobile home. He was rescued, and he is also on a ventilator, and they're also hoping that he's a pit bull and that he'll be all right. I think the big news today or the last couple of days is the biggest pit bull that weighs 173 pounds. You, of course, must have seen that, Chris.
I did, and I...
And I have one question. How can a pit bull be 173 pounds?
I was going to say, I take issue with calling this dog a pit bull. I mean, this dog has to be some kind of mastiff.
Yes, it can't be a. I mean, it may have some, it's clearly a mixed breed, which may include one of the three breeds that are commonly used as pit bull, but no pit bull of the three breeds that we usually associate with that is 173 pounds. I'm sorry, it's not possible. So whatever its dominant breed is, I think they're calling him the Hulk, which at 173 pounds, I would just be afraid to take him outside. If he wanted to do something and he pulled as hard as he could, I don't know how you could control him. I'm sure he's a great guy. You know what I mean? But
yeah. And that's just, I think that's the same with any of the very large dogs.
Exactly. I'm not picking on Hulk.
Consider that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he could break the fence down if he went full speed and just went bam right through the fence. I mean, 173 pounds, and he's not even full grown yet.
He's going to be quite a big dog. I hope that they're doing a lot of obedience training with him.
Yes.
But it's kind of what we had spoken about a couple of weeks ago, where we just have this over-broadening umbrella of the term. And, of course, with some people, it's not going to matter what you call the dog. They're going to call it a pit bull no matter what.
Yeah.
And, we've seen some internet panic attacks from pro-BSL advocates over this dog.
Yeah, of course, because he's clearly going to get loose and kill everybody.
Yeah. Because, that's the fate of every dog.
Yeah. I thought the most, the most disappointing story this week was came out of Kansas City, which returned $86,000 of the $100,000 grants that it got from PetSmart in order to spay, neuter, license, and other activities for pit bulls. Apparently, the way the city administered this was such that in 1 year they did, 45 dogs, and that's just not enough. They limited it to two zip codes. They didn't do enough outreach or promotion. Nobody knew about it, and thus what ended up happening is nothing. So since they did not comply with the grant of doing enough spay-neuters during a certain time period, they had to return $86,000. And, of course, the critics were unhappy because they felt that it was improperly and inefficiently promoted, much like some of the records companies don't promote some of their some of their artists. This wasn't promoted enough, and of course, what got me was the zinger that I got was the city said, well, we did the best we could, and we understand that many pit bull owners do not want to spay and neuter their dogs, as if to imply in that statement that the reason they had to return the $86,000. Was not because they didn't outreach and they didn't promote. It was because they went out there and promoted their asses off, and everybody said, no, we don't want our dogs spayed or neutered, which I think if you have listened to our show and heard from the people from Pets for Life or Kim Wolf, they're people that will wait in line to get their pets spayed and neutered.
4 a.m., people get in line.
Yeah.
Waiting for low cost and free spay neuter services. The implication that this is just, oh, pit bull owners don't want this is offensive. And I'd like to point out that they have a breed discriminatory mandatory spay neuter law. So there is a question that I had when reading this article about even if they had promoted this, people thinking that it's a trap.
Yeah. But it was
only cited to have their dogs confiscated. I could see people, even in areas where there are no breed discriminatory laws, people think that some things like this are traps to, get their dogs in trouble somehow for, whatever. Yes, exactly. It's very interesting that they also didn't reach out to any of the groups that are doing this sort of work.
That might already have those connections to the community involved.
Yes. Brent Holner's group specifically jumps out in mind. He had said that they were not consulted at all
Right.
Regarding promotion or outreach
yeah.
Or
even the plan.
And they're so effective. It's amazing how effective his group is. And, you know, it's sort of silly that they sat on this money. And I mean, they had a year, I believe, they had to spend this.
Yeah, they had it. My question is, if you're a guy who's sitting in an office in Kansas City and you don't know anything about pit bull adoption, spay, neuters, any of that stuff, why not just pick up the phone and call somebody who knows, like Brent, and say, Brent, what can we do to make this effective? And then listen to him, and at least you'll have your hat on, and you'll know what you're doing. You'll have some frame of reference. What they did is they didn't do any of that. They said, well, we don't know anything about it, so let's do ABC. You know, I mean, that's just a recipe for stupidity, if you ask me.
Yeah, and it is really unfortunate that money didn't help the people that it was going to help. And, you know, hopefully the returning of the money and the publicity that surrounded it will, I don't know, maybe affect some change in the way that they will manage future grants, in being inclusive with partners in the area who are actually experienced with this sort of work.
Yeah, well, I just think the whole plan was flawed. When you have that much money and you have two zip codes, it's just, you know, it's just not enough. There's not enough people out there in those two zip codes, and you're not really, it just seems to me, you're just setting it up for failure from the very start of the plan. You know,
there's a group in Philadelphia that they receive grant money periodically from some of the bigger organizations, and they, you know, do the same thing where it's area code based. And let's just say that some very dedicated and creative people have ways around those sorts of things.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a little station identification. We're going to come back and discuss breed discriminatory laws as a ballot measure. Chris says that many people have talked to her about this and they think it's a good idea. So we're going to talk about it. And
what?
We'll come back right after that.
You're listening to Pit Bulletin Legal News Radio. Follow us by clicking the follow link in the upper left-hand corner at www.blogtalkradio.com/pit-bulletin-legal-news. Or better yet, join our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/pit-bulletin-legal-news to hear the latest news and updates during the week. Join the discussion during the show by logging into chat as a guest through Facebook or call us at 646-595-4137.
All right, we're back. We've got Denise on the line. Denise, any changes in your marriage plans?
No change in my marriage plans, but I am all alone here in the chat room, so people need to come on and join me over here.
All right, well, we're going to make them do that by sending out a 10-volt charge of electricity, so...
All right, there you go.
And let's check in with Laura, who's been in Boston, because we want a weather report. Laura, how's the weather there in Boston? I've been watching television, and it looks like they closed the town. I don't know.
I think they closed the state.
They didn't close the state, but they did shut down public transportation all day.
So did you go to work via the bicycle or walking?
I've not gotten to work the last couple of days. Did go have a couple nice walks with the dog. The dog went out skiing yesterday. But we've got, like, crazy piles of snow, like 5 to 10 foot snow piles where people have shoveled out.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I think there's more coming. I love it. I think it's beautiful, and it's kind of cool because there's just so much of it.
Well, you know, it's freezing here. It's like 52. It's 52 here, so, you know. We're all bundled up.
I don't know how you do it, Fred.
I know. We're all bundled up here. I got my dogs with their jackets on and hoodies and everything and got my fireplace roaring. You know, it's freezing. I tell you,
poor
really
thing.
Denise, are you freezing down there?
Oh, my God. It's so cold. It's like 70-something.
Oh, my God.
Oh, jeez. Oh, wow. You better be careful. I mean, you could freeze to death in those temperatures.
But, you know, she's going to have to wear gloves while she's typing.
My heart.
I am wearing my boots, though.
All All right. Well, good to know that we have all these different weather things to talk about on the show, because we're all over the place. And but first, before let's talk about Chris. You say a lot of people have asked you about this whole breed discriminatory laws as a ballot measure. Tell us before we introduce Nancy about that.
The past week and a half, 2 weeks, four separate individuals in four separate locations approached me via Stop BSL and as well as personally, asking what I thought about putting a breed discriminatory law on the ballot for a repeal. I thought it was interesting that all of these people sort of came in, from different places at the same time discussing this issue. So, I thought it would be very beneficial to people to be able to talk about this, about the pros and cons, and hear from Nancy, who has firsthand experience in dealing with the difficulties behind ballot measures.
Well, I think we start the conversation with the fact that I think it's only happened twice, once in Miami and once in Aurora. I can't think of any other place. In both cases, it lost. In both cases, it was very difficult to in both cases, there was a long-standing policy of having it, which was the incumbent position. And I don't know what the statistics are, but I know that the vast majority of incumbents usually win in any kind of political race. There's an advantage to being an incumbent unless you've, sent pictures of yourself naked and people found out about it or something like that, and that comes up as a campaign issue.
And even then.
Well, I don't know. I'm waiting. To see. Whatever happens to that guy. I mean, he did try to get reelected, and of course, John Sanford, who had his affair with the lady on the in Appalachia, and he was really actually down in South America. He got reelected after he came back and apologized. So it seems like the American public is very acceptable of apologies. But let's bring in Nancy Transow from Colorado Dogs to talk about her take on this issue. So, Nancy, welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
And
thank you very much. It's nice in Colorado, by the way. Boston can keep snow. We'd like to have our continuous spring happen.
I was going to ask you about the weather, because that's one of the themes of tonight's show is weather around the United States. And, of course, when Yvette comes on from Canada, we'll be able to talk to her about the weather. It's the one sort of, common thread that runs throughout the show, no matter what we do.
It's warm. It's like spring here. It's beautiful and sunny, and there's no snow. And as a native Californian, I would like for it to stay that way permanently.
Right.
So I don't think I'm going to get my wish.
You may
but
get
right
your
now,
wish with climate change, so
I'm okay.
Be careful what you wish for there.
Benefit. The one benefit of climate change would be my own selfish need to have sun all the time and no snow in my life.
Well, I think snow, I like snow the first night.
Stop buying hybrid cars, people. Nancy wants a warmer climate.
I do. Please.
Well, they had a report today that scientists are discussing ways to cool the planet off by injecting sulfuric acid up into the in the clouds to make it dark, so more sunlight gets bounced back, out of the off the planet. And of course,
sounds like a terrible idea that's going to end up killing off humanity in the end.
Well, what they're saying is it's too risky now, meaning we're not all going to die now. But if we all were going to die, maybe we would do that. But
as a scientist, I'm not feeling that idea at all. That sounds awful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the start of a disaster movie.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm telling you, I heard it on NPR, and they had the lady on from the National Science Foundation or wherever it is in Washington that they talked about this idea. So I'm not making this up. But it seems to me whenever man intervenes in anything that has to do with nature, we screw it up.
Yes,
there's so many unintended consequences that we don't know about,
And
it's a kind of the same thing of, you know, with political things that happen. You know,
good tie-in.
Good tie-in. So
yes.
I'll give you an example of an unintended consequence that happened in Florida, that people got sick, the legislature and people in general, insurance rates were going up, so they decided, you know what, we're sick of these whiplash injuries. We're going to stop those from being filed, and we're going to have no fault insurance. So no matter who's at fault, you get your medical bills paid and your lost wages. This will thus cut down on frivolous whiplash claims. And what's happened is that this has become a cottage industry for the lawyers, and now they are making millions of dollars off of these what are called personal injury protection benefits. And they would have saved so much money if they had just left it the way it was. Now they're trying to get rid of all this. So that's just one example of, you know, people actually thought about it. They had task force. They did all this stuff. Then they passed the law, and then boom. Now they wish they never. Now the insurance companies are going, oh my God, we've got to get rid of this. You know, so so there are a lot of times that happens with laws. And let's now tie this back into BSL or BDL. I don't see, my own personal opinion is, I don't see it as the front line of the thing to do. I just think I think if the question is, if you've never had BSL in a town and they want to put it to a vote, I think you have a lot better chance than if you're in a place where it's had it for 20 or 30 years and they say, well, do you want to keep it? I think that's different. What do you think, Nancy?
I actually agree 100%. I think, so with ballot measures, first of all, we never wanted Aurora to go to the ballot. It was the last thing that we wanted to have happen because social referendums are notorious for not passing. So we knew the minute that it went to be repealed and it was put to the public vote, we lacked time, we lacked money, and we lacked resources to get it out. That being said, in about a four-week period, we gained 11 points in favor. So that was pretty significant for us. But historically, if you ask people who are going to the vote to change something that happens in their community, you can almost bet the farm on the fact that they are not going to vote to change things. They don't vote to raise taxes, and they don't vote to change things.
Unless it specifically affects them, and there's not enough pit bull owners to make that difference.
Exactly. And Aurora also has a very, part of the problem in Aurora itself is the messaging that goes out and the community itself. So the people who tend to show up to vote there, even though they aren't the largest demographic in the community, were upper to middle class white conservatives. And they are the
just
last
the people
who
love
usually
pit bulls.
Get to vote.
Just the kind of people that love pit bulls.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. So
but
our underserved
community, I find it a little confusing, though, because those people are very traditionally for property rights.
They don't see this as property rights, though.
Nancy, didn't you I believe I had asked you about this when the ballot was going on, about what things were sort of resonating with the voters, and I had asked specifically about property rights. If I'm remembering correctly, you said that was not resonating with them, correct?
It was not resonating with them. Colorado is a very weird state in that it has the distinction of being incredibly dog-friendly. I literally have never lived in such a dog-friendly state. And at the same time, they have this disconnect that pit bulls are like everybody else's dogs. So when you went into property rights, what they saw were dogs. They don't see them as property here. So when you went for the property right argument, it just didn't resonate at all. What resonated was that there was a violation of due process and people were coming into homes and killing innocent family pets. And that's what really grabbed people was when we stuck to that theme. I don't know that we would have been able to pass this via ballot measure, and we'll certainly go back again and try it again, this time on our terms when we have time to collect signatures and we have time to educate people in the process and we have the resources for it. But it was very time intensive and the amount of money we would have had to pour into that campaign was was overwhelming, and we were fighting messaging with city council themselves. And we had members of city council going out talking about this ballot measure and why you shouldn't vote to repeal BSL, which felt a little bit, you know, like cheating on their part.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't know.
Are they allowed to do that?
Are they allowed to do that?
I don't think so.
I mean, in Miami-Dade County, when they had their ballot measure, nobody wanted it on the ballot there either, but it was what happened was is they were up in the legislature and they cut a deal that said, okay, we won't pass a thing that says you can't have BSL as long as you have a ballot referendum. And they, of course, said, of course, we'll do that. Then they made a ballot referendum where the language was so confusing that you couldn't understand what you were voting for.
Right.
And Denise, who lives in Miami, went around all the malls and all this and asked people, do you even know this is going on? They had no idea.
Right.
So there was some polling done initially that showed that 50% of the people in Miami would vote in favor of keeping the ban. And if that's the starting point, you're going to lose.
Right.
So what happened after that initial polling was there was really not much interest by any of the national animal welfare groups to pour money into a losing cause.
Right.
So I think, you know, that a ballot referendum to me is a no-brainer no.
Yes, I agree.
And I think even if you were in a situation where it was a new thing, I would still say that you have a better chance of either turning it around by putting legal pressure on the parts of the law that are unconstitutional. Or sitting in on council meetings, get to know the council members and trying to get the council members to do something as opposed to the general public. Because I think the general public at this point, the vast majority of the general public that I meet, they don't know that pit bull's not a breed. They don't know that the Hulk is not a pit bull. There's so much that they don't know about pit bulls, and they're not interested in knowing because they don't have one. And they don't have any dogs in their house, and it's like anything else. If you don't come in contact with it, you're not going to be interested in learning about it or changing your mind about it.
Right, and we found that. So when this went to the ballot, one of the first things that I drew experience from was my work with LGBT rights and with same-sex marriage. And every time that drove to the ballot for 15 years, we knew we were going to lose that. Because of those exact reasons, people weren't identifying with the issue itself. And to them, they had blinders on and didn't think that this affected them or anybody that they cared about. Therefore, they were going to vote to keep the status quo.
Right.
Because people will lean towards what they feel is the safest thing for them. And for people, that means it's going to be the status quo, no matter what that subject is.
And I think, and my explanation of gay marriage is that in the last 2 or 3 years, legal challenges have brought it to light. And what's happened is that when state courts started to say, well, this is unconstitutional, when it got argued, up there, it brought that out to the public. The public, I think, there was initially resistance from the public. And then there was this domino effect that occurred that, after 10 or 15 states did it, now the norm became, having gay marriage instead of not having gay marriage. And so now it's reversed. Now instead of having the status quo be, no, we're not doing that, now the status quo, and the Supreme Court has, to me, indicated by what they're saying that they're gonna say it's a federal right, that it's a federal, that it's something that applies to everybody. That's my explanation. What's your explanation of why that particular issue became changed?
I would agree with that. I think that there was a change in that. I think that there was a change in the age groups and whose voices started to being heard, so younger people who never saw this as an issue. And I also think, and we are actually seeing this with BSL, which is pretty entertaining and fun for me at this point, probably shouldn't be as much fun, is that the people who are anti-family pet and who want family pets killed for just how they look are starting to actually screw themselves with their own behavior. And so that happened with same-sex marriage, too. You had fringe people who were just acted out of their minds, who were saying all sorts of outrageous things. They were taking to the internet. They were doing those kind of things, and it started to turn people off.
Yeah.
And so we're starting to see that now as
and there were some
individuals
scandals.
Become
there,
more empowered.
Yeah.
They sound crazier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know in gay marriage in Florida, they paid some guy some amazing amount of money to, you know, for some kind. And Florida's been very behind on this. The attorney general is, you know, fighting against it still.
Florida has been a special flower in this entire situation,
so,
that is for sure.
So Pam Bondi, who's the attorney general, has you know, fought it. And,
uh-huh.
you know, again, this is something that I think is personal to her. I don't think it's what Florida voters want. I just think that it's her saying, this is my belief, and I'm since I have the power to do it, I'm going to do this.
That's the Molly Markert. I mean, we saw the same thing, right, with BSL and in Aurora. And, you know, Molly beautifully put her own foot in her mouth and admitted that it was about the owners.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of the same thing in Aurora that was driving that, and that's part of what drove it to the ballot measure. The other part that drove it to the ballot measure, which is uncomfortable to talk about at times, is that Aurora had been more receptive, and I think sometimes with some advocates, they become so passionate that they don't think about the messaging that they're putting out there.
Yes.
And so we had some of that going on, and so the city council shied away, and that ultimately is what helped drive it to the ballot.
Yeah.
Was there started to become a lot of vitriol and a lot of very mixed messaging and kind of storming the fort. And so city council went from being very receptive to it to bouncing it off to the ballot because they did not want to get in the middle of that whole fray.
Yeah.
Because in the end, for city council, right, it really isn't about pitfalls. It's not about BSL. It's about getting reelected.
Yep.
That's really what they're most concerned about. And
right.
so that is part of what had them kick it to the ballot. But I would never suggest that a group actually try to bring it to the ballot, not unless they have millions of dollars, tons of commercials, and about a year to work on the process.
Yeah, and I think the problem is that you know, I think the difference between gay marriage and BSL is that BSL becomes an issue every time there's a dog incident.
Exactly.
And so there's more fear there, and I see it in court where judges say things like, I don't really think this pit bull's dangerous, but God forbid if he goes out and bites somebody, it's going to be on me. So no.
Right.
So there's this, and that actually happened in a case in Miami, and the court actually said, hey, the judge is biased and threw that particular thing out. But that thought process of in every dangerous dog hearing and in every pit bull classification case is,
right.
I don't want this to be on me if this dog gets out and does something. And so, and that's why you never want your dog to get involved in that net, because then you're subject to that thought process, which is flawed.
Right.
But it's what people think. And so
so
the problem is that, you know, I just think that in Aurora particularly, I mean, I saw a lot of cross-messaging between even our side.
Yes.
A lot of turf protection and all this. And if I'm a council member and I see that, on one of the sides, and I'm not saying you had anything to do with it. I'm just saying there's nothing you can do about it. If somebody wants to do something that you don't agree with, you can't stop them. It's a free country. But
it's
unfortunate that the groups can't get together, and it's just typical, say, okay, here's going to be our overall way we're going to do this. There's always someone who says, no, I'm going to do this my way, and this is how we're doing it. And, you know, there's an inconsistency there on your own side, and then you have, you know, the other side. In Miami-Dade, the other side, they didn't do anything. No Miami-Dade commissioner ever went out and said, you know, vote for the BSL. None of them did. The only, when they had the pro-con, argument, the pro-con argument was Dahlia Keynes, who was a pit bull advocate in Miami, versus the mother of the woman whose kid got injured by a pit bull, which caused the pit bull ban in 1989. Uh-huh. It was the victim. I mean, it goes back to the same old emotion versus your heart versus your head.
Right.
You know, and you're going to lose the heart if you're
right.
when you're debating, because here's a lady who, and what I found interesting was it wasn't the lady who was the woman who was hurt in 1989 is now a grown woman. If she
right.
wanted to come in and say, don't vote for, you know, I it's terrible what happened, you know, that's great. But why is her mom, you know, whose daughter's now grown up, why is she still at this point? And,
we had,
you know,
we had some of that with Jeff Borchardt's wife's parents, so his mother and father-in-law, who actually contacted Aurora City Council. And originally, from the city council member, we had heard they said that they were Aurora residents. That's been somewhat disputed. But they actually were lobbying very heavily for BSL not to be repealed in Aurora, which was frustrating to me, first of all, because they don't live in Aurora. This was, you know, something to be handled by the
pool.
Residents there.
It's dirty pool.
It is dirty
always.
Pool. There was a lot of dirty pool. There was a lot of dirty pool that went in to this entire ballot measure. And we literally had 90 days.
Yeah.
We had 90 days, and our original phone polling showed us, you know, 68% or 73% behind right off the bat. And
yeah.
anybody who's done any type of
electioneering
recognizes that you're
yeah.
in deep trouble right off the bat. And
yeah.
and then we spent
especially
a lot of time.
Especially with only 3 months.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we spent a lot of time with distractions behind that mixed messaging and a lot of playing into stereotypes and trying to tell people, you know, let's think about the messaging we're doing. Let's not play into stereotypes. It's really important that we be consistent. And there was so much kind of behind the scenes stuff going on that it also took up a tremendous amount of time and energy to have to manage all of that kind of stuff. And so, and like you said, that happens all the time. So somebody who would look at a ballot measure needs to be aware that that's going to be a part of the dynamic too.
Yeah, and it happens at the council level also. I mean, you'll have people
oh, yeah.
come in with black T-shirts that say, you know, ban the breed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll be giving anecdotal testimony about their own dog, and you know, after about 20 of those,
right.
you know, the city commissioners are dozing off, and you know, it's just you can't control that. I think one guy who did a really good job doing that was Josh Liddy. He actually had a meeting at his house.
Uh-huh.
In Riverside, California, about the California measures that went over. I don't
uh-huh.
know exactly which one, but he put it on Facebook. He said, look, does everybody get together? And actually, when they went before the council, it was a pretty good group of people. I mean, there wasn't.
Yes.
I believe that was Pasadena.
It was Pasadena,
the mandatory spay-neuter. Yeah.
I called him, you know, and we talked about it, and you know, he had to. I mean, that's the right thing to do, but even so, you're not going to get everybody to come. There are
right.
going to be people who are, you know, off, are not going to be, you know, on the same page. And
right.
so,
right.
To me, the safest way in any political situation is to try and get to know the commissioners, go to the meetings, get to see how they lean, try and get an individual, bead on how each one of them feels about it. And if it's 6-0, you know, don't bother. If it's 3-3, then now you can concentrate your time on trying to persuade somebody.
Right.
I want to point out that people that have, you know, brought this up conversationally, you know, this isn't a first line of attack for them. I kind of feel
mm-hmm.
like maybe they feel like this is a sort of a last-ditch effort, that they've approached the council, they've spoken to their council members, they aren't getting any any good feedback. There's nobody who's willing to support a repeal. You know, they're sort of happy with the status quo. You know, they feel like they don't have the money for a lawyer to be
yeah.
able to attack these things legally. And so they see a ballot measure as an option, and they think that this is going to be a successful thing. You know, because not many people know exactly what goes into a ballot measure and how much work
right.
and how much money it is.
I would use what we were talking about, the gay marriage thing. I would say you're much better off spending money on a lawyer
right.
who looks at the law and says this is unconstitutional, And then you go to the commission and say, look, you either sue or, you know, write a letter saying you're going to sue. And
right.
That's the only leverage you can, that now they're going to have to spend money. I don't even like BSL as a last ditch, a ballot measure as a last ditch effort. I think you're better off hiring a lawyer to sue the, you know, to sue the city or county because it's unconstitutional. I think you'll get more listening people to that than you will to a ballot measure.
It's also going to be less expensive. And if I can bring that part of that back, in hiring an attorney, it's actually a less expensive option. So with the ballot measure that we had $10,000 in assisted money from other groups, and I actually spent through that period almost $40,000 of my own money, money that I had dipped into to help try to support this measure. Now, I live in Fort Collins. I live 2 hours away from Aurora. Mm-hmm. And Larimer County doesn't even talk about BSL. It is a non-issue in Fort Collins. It's a pit-bull-friendly place. We have one of the lowest bite rates in the state. It's a fantastic place. So even in that period of time, from approaching city council members in the beginning to that vote, there was $50,000 spent. It would have been, if we had been able to, it would have been a lot easier if we had had that option to hire an attorney and say, here's this money. Let's do this. Now, with Colorado, we're exploring some other options, and I think fracking has had some initial rulings that may allow us some ins to address some of the home rule inconsistencies that we're now going to start seeing with these rulings. Even then, it's going to be cheaper to deal with it on that end than it would be to try to push a ballot measure through Denver, through Louisville, through Lone Tree, which, you know, nobody's even looking at Lone Tree.
Well, the thing about Colorado is that if you want it, with $50,000, you could put on a rational basis claim. Let's just get
right.
And that has nothing to do with the last case in Denver was the Diaz versus the city of Denver or the county of Denver, whatever it is. And the holding in that case was rational basis is a question of fact for the jury. And, you know, they spent 5 years getting to that point and then settled.
Uh-huh.
But the point I'm making is for $50,000, you could take the city of Aurora and say, okay, we don't think that your law, forget whether you have home rule or not, we don't think your law has a rational basis. And you could have leveraged that into more than you would have gotten if you had spent that money on a ballot measure.
Exactly.
I think.
I agree 100%.
One of the things I wanted to sort of go back to is regarding the language of the ballot measure. Where, you know, you had spoken about Miami, Fred had spoken about Miami and how convoluted the language was. The ballot language in Aurora was very simple. After the ballot failed for you guys, I spent a good deal of time researching specifically about the language of ballot measures. And what I found is that basically in both cases, and these are from people who have, you know, extensive experience crafting and dealing with ballots, in both cases, overly complex language and overly simplified language, it works against you. Because, you know, overly complex language, well, you know, you get confused, people aren't really sure what they're doing, it can be worded prejudicially. Then when you get into overly simplified language, what happens is apparently people see that and they think that it's a very simple thing and that it is an issue that they don't have to be informed about. Therefore, you know, they might like see in either a news article or whatever, they might see the language and they think like, oh, well, this is very cut and dry. It's very simple. And that actually leads people to not looking into the issue.
And we found that a lot.
Yeah.
Many
but there's
people
no
in
answer.
Aurora,
there's,
when
there's...
we approached them, had no idea that BSL even existed. They had absolutely no idea. Some of them even had pit bulls sitting by them at the door and had no idea that BSL is in the realm of Aurora. Now, one of the funny outcomes of Aurora, and Chris has seen some of my shares on this, is that there's a new shelter director there. And in Aurora, since pit bull mixes are allowed to be adopted out, instead of like the old shelter director who killed anything that looked remotely like a pit bull, Now when you look at dogs available for adoption, you have a ton of pit bull mixes that are actually getting out of the shelter, and they have reached out to rescues now, and pit bulls who are getting caught up in BSL, they're trying to get rescues to help work with these dogs and get them out. So there has been, you know, unintended consequences, and there have been some positive ones that have come out of that. But, you know, the other problem with ballot measures is once you lose a ballot measure, it's not like approaching the city council every 2 or 4 years. As you have a turnover, city councils who come in after that historically are going to be unwilling to deal with the issue because
it was already decided by public vote.
Right.
And I want to get elected.
Exactly.
Well, why would I do that?
Public's voting to put you back in office. So
yeah.
You don't want to bring this up again. So with Aurora, short of putting it back on the ballot measure, because now we have nothing to lose in that, or taking a legal stance on this and getting an attorney, which is probably smarter, there's no other way to broach the subject for the next 10, 15, 20 years even. And that was actually brought up in one of the meetings discussing the ballot measure. So there were a couple of city council members, Molly, my best friend, of course, being one of them, who actually brought that up. Now, this won't come back again, right? So there was, again, it was a lot of dirty pool in the end. It was really pretty typical and predictable and disheartening.
And then also, speaking of unintended consequences of a loss of a ballot measure like this, you know, it's, I hate to have to say this, but it's ammunition. You know,
it
we see
the
failures. Exactly. We see the failures of Miami and Aurora being held up constantly by people who claim that people want breed discriminatory laws are the majority.
Right.
When in fact, the majority of people, if you like ask the question if they should be regulated or banned or whatever, they say no, but they don't really consider it until you bring the subject to them. It's not even
right.
really on the radar.
Right, I agree,
but
100%.
It becomes damaging rhetoric to the conversation in future in other places.
Right, and we hear that. You've seen that too when we're talking about stuff. If somebody's going to use, if they're going to lob, you know, some kind of bomb at us, it's going to be about, look how great it happened in Aurora for you, you know, as they're chuckling. And of course, I'm thinking that they sound even more, you know, politically ignorant than I ever thought. But it definitely is, and you're right. And it empowers that side. And we've seen some of that language happening, right, where they're like, take it to a ballot, take it to a ballot. That's their new chant. And we don't want to start that process. It rarely ends up good for anybody in the end.
Yes, and I like to say what Yvette had said when we were discussing the failure, you know, right after it happened, is that an issue of public safety should not be an issue of public vote.
Right.
It's complex. There is data there. There's studies that need to be looked at. There's information that needs to be considered carefully. And of course, you know, all that information favors breed neutral laws.
Right.
An issue of public safety should not be left to emotion, and ballot measures open the door to emotion playing a huge factor in how the vote is going to end up turning out.
Absolutely. I mean, that was right. That was the same argument again, back to same sex marriage, was, you know, people's rights should not be put up to a vote.
Yeah.
That's not how you deal with these things. You look at science, And you look at the Constitution when it came to equal rights, and those things should be decided that way, not based on the swaying of public opinion at any given time. I mean, we had the serendipitous ghost pit bull attack on Shih Tzu 2 days before the vote in Aurora. Luckily, mail-in ballots were the norm, and so most of the ballots had already been mailed in regardless. But when I mentioned that to Jen, I said, you have to look at what's on the news. And Jen said, of course, I've been waiting for this. Now, the dog has never been found, been found. But
right.
they still talk about this pit bull who jumped from a two-story balcony, and that's also not even close to the story from the girl who knew the dog.
It's amazing what – so, for example, in Clay, Alabama, the reason they passed their law was because – the guy who was the manager of the city read about it in the paper. And the court said, hey, that's not a rational basis. You got to have a problem in your own town. In Nulano, the reason that they passed it was because the because there was an incident much like the one you're referring to that was a ghost incident. It was an incident mm-hmm. where a kid went outside. Nobody was watching him. He got bit by a dog. He came in the house, and the mother said to him, and this is in the report because we read it when we got our discovery, and the mother said to the kid, "What happened?" He said, "Well, I tried to pet the dog with this fishnet, and he bit me." And, you know, and she, the lady looks out the door and sees this dog, you know, out in the street, and she says, "Is that the dog that bit you?" And the kid says, "Yes." So when the cops come, she said, the dog was gone. And then she said, "Well, the dog that bit him was a pit bull." So that's the identification. The Jesus. Dog was never found. There was never a dangerous dog classification or attempt to make, you know, anything like that. And if there were, that dog would have been set free because he was provoked. You can't walk up to a dog with a fishnet and put it over his head and expect him not to react.
Exactly.
And there are some cases where there's a dog is allowed to defend himself. So anyway, the bottom line is that I guess that we, Nancy, that you and I agree that a ballot measure should probably never be considered as by our side as a good idea, even if it's the last desperate hope.
Yes. Yes, you just sometimes it really is a matter of being patient, waiting it out, and you know, finding candidates that you can push for, and trying to get the representatives you want in city council, or you know, finding an attorney, even one of the larger groups who has a lot more resources, and asking for help exploring if there are legal options. And you know, when we have done this behind some of the rulings that have come down lately, we found a tremendous amount of support in going to the larger organizations and their attorneys and saying, "Hey, this is the ruling we looked at. Is there any meat to this that might translate over to home rule?" And they have been more than willing to explore that and see what our options are and help out in
that. Well, you can always go with rational basis. You can always go with rational basis.
We're willing to go with anything with Colorado. We are not even close to done.
You would have to try it out in a small town, because Denver will just it would cost you. They're so enamored of their breed ban. It's become part of their DNA in that state. They're going to defend it to the death.
We are lucky that Charlie Brown is termed out. That gives us a little bit of hope. But Mayor Hancock supports that ban, and so does Hickenlooper, actually.
Yeah.
So I mean, Denver is going to have to go down
if somebody wants to try a lawsuit, they should try it against Aurora, they should try it against, you know, some small town that doesn't have the resources that Denver has, because Denver could conceivably spend $500,000 defending this and not think anything about it.
Right, and we actually have four small towns that have DSL that we could absolutely take a look at dealing with that.
You'll send me their ordinances. I'll take a look at them.
Perfect. I will do that.
All right, well, thanks for coming on the show. Send me those ordinances, and I'll see if there's some way we can do something. And thanks for coming on the show, and we'll be looking forward to
your
next appearance.
Thanks for having me on again. All right. Have a good night.
Good night.
All right.
Good night, Nancy.
Night.
Day. All right. So next up is our Canadian weather specialist, Yvette Van Veen. Who obviously, you know, is going to know more about the Canadian weather than anyone that is on the show. All right, Yvette, can you beat 10 feet snowdrifts in Boston?
I surely cannot do that.
Oh.
It's cold and it's icy. Well, not even that bad. It was sunny today.
What's your temperature?
-7, so that'll be what, like 28?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, well, Laura, what's your temperature there?
It's warm, it's about 30 degrees.
All right, so you're actually warmer, but they have more snow. Laura has more snow, so that tips the balance in her favor.
Yeah, we got close to 5
feet. They have more snow than anybody at this point.
Well, you're probably getting the snow we had a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Could be, yeah.
All right, so
sent it off your way. There you go. Whoosh. Blame the Canadians for all the snow, right?
That's what it is. It's all Yvette's fault.
Yeah.
That's right. All right, so I have one question before Chris raises her question.
Uh-oh.
So I'm teaching my dogs to sit, okay?
Yep.
Very simple. You say sit, you know, they sit, you give them a treat. So now what's happening is when I have lunch, I have some lunch meat. So I'll give them, when I'm having lunch meat, I'll give them like a little piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say to the first dog, sit. And I'll say, Barney, sit. And Barney sits, and all four of them sit at the same time.
Okay.
So now the question is it do any good, or are they learning anything? I shouldn't tell them to sit if they're already sitting, right?
Well, it's a little redundant.
If I go to the second dog and he's already sitting, I don't go, hey, sit. Because the dog will go, well, I'm already doing that.
Mm-hmm. It's a little redundant. However, you will often see when dogs that don't know their commands really well, that if they're sitting and you say sit, they'll do their little push-up thing. They'll go into the next behavior because it's usually sit, stand, down or sit, down,
yeah.
stand. So sometimes it's an interesting thing to do just to see if the dog knows that sit means butt on the ground rather than, you know, nice
they
little
know.
Pattern.
They know.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, a little redundant.
At that
redundant.
Point, do you stop saying sit and just give them the food?
Well, it depends. You give them the food for whatever you want because they're always learning. So, I mean, technically speaking, they could just be learning that, you know, the way to mooch food from people at the table is to sit. And if you're happy with that, knock yourself out.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to teach them to sit. I tell them to sit before I feed them their dinner. I tell them to sit when I give them a little snack. I tell them to sit when I give them a toy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to, you know, get them, you know, to sit. So I can move on to the next command. But I'm just when you have multiple dogs and, you know, you sit down at the table and, you know, they're all standing there and you go, okay, sit. And then they all four of them sit. Then it seems like sitting, it's a redundant command. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I mean, plan out what, you know, every family's a little different in terms of what they want. Even if they're already sitting, I wouldn't personally say sit. But the other way of looking at it, too, is, you know, commands aren't just words. I mean, you can also teach the dogs that, you know, if there's food on the table, you should sit.
Mm-hmm.
And the command is then food on the table, right?
Right?
That's what's telling the dog what to do. So that's kind of slick when you get into some of that stuff where you really sort of think out the sneakier type of things because then you get dogs where they see
well,
food
on the
table.
Well, I don't want to get table. On
your bad side. My bad side, yeah.
Because I can see you're a very conniving, thinking in advance kind of person.
Well, but it's kind of cool. You do some really neat things. Are you growling at me?
No.
Oh.
That was Chris.
Oh yeah, blame somebody else.
All right, so Chris, what's your what do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, I wanted to revisit our intended topic from last week, which was the continuation of our topic from the week before that.
Now, this is some complicated. I can't even keep track of what you're talking about. We're sorry we didn't have you on last week, but we had a three-panel roundtable of race and breed discriminatory laws, and it was just we couldn't get away from it.
That's okay. That's okay. Break my heart.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So we had talked about the making the decision behind euthanizing a dog who is untreatably aggressive.
Okay.
And we had sort of talked very, very lightly about, what kind of goes behind that decision. And I know it's something that people really, really struggle with because we're starting to live in a culture where, you know, there is this idea that every single dog can be saved regardless.
Yep.
Either that or they should go to sanctuary and live out the rest of their lives, you know, chasing rainbows in fields of, you know, butterflies and whatever people think that sanctuary life is like. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that decision, maybe what people should consider, you know, before thinking about euthanizing for, you know, aggression, and I don't know if you have any personal boundaries that you have with clients or whatever behind the decision to euthanize an aggressive dog.
Wow, that's a depressing question.
It is, and I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, it's a good question, though, but it's depressing because you know what, you're going to offend somebody, and it's also, it's going to offend somebody no matter what I say, but it's a conversation that needs to be had. And I think, well, first of all, every dog and family, it's a unique situation. So I don't think that there's this broad stroke, because you're going to have people saying, well, I took this hopeless case and we worked hard with them. And then you'll have other people saying, well, we couldn't, you know, deal with a more minor problem. So you'll get a lot of variation. I think first thing we have to look at is how much damage has this dog done? You know, are we dealing with a dog that's got this long, protracted growl and they don't really do any damage, or if they do, it's like a little scrape, you know. That's a completely different scenario than a dog, you know, that's maiming, right? So that's one of the factors to consider is, if things go wrong reasonably, what are the expected outcomes? Because we sometimes look at the dog in front of us and say, I really want to save him for whatever reason. And there's many reasons to do it, but you're also putting others in harm's way when you do that. So it's not this 100% virtuous situation, because if it ends up costing another animal or you know, their life, or they get injured, and it scars that animal, like there's a cost to it that's quite high. So I think that's one of the first things to sort of address, is to say, you know, what am I asking for everybody that has to come in contact with this dog? What is the risk I'm asking them to take by doing this? And is it a reasonable expectation to do that? So I think that's probably one of the more important questions to start with, to think for everyone involved and what position you're putting them in. That would be the first thing that I would look at. Are there boundaries that I put in place? Definitely. I think from a trainer's perspective, it's about compliance, where you're going to have some clients who are wonderfully compliant and follow the rules and do what they're told, and there's others that don't. And you can have a dog with less severe issues, but if the owners aren't following safety protocols, it's a really dangerous situation because of the owner compliance. So I think that's what impacts trainers more than, can this dog be saved? You know, like, it's the idea of, do we trust this particular person, what they're telling us, what their behavior's saying, you know, that they're going to follow the rules or not, whether I'll accept that person as a client, because the last thing we want to do is be the trainer who told somebody to do something, and then they don't quite follow it, and something bad happens. And I think that's a position a lot of trainers can sympathize with.
Let's say I was your client, and we got to a certain point, and I said to you, well, do you think I should put this dog to sleep? Is that a question that you would answer?
It's a question that I would walk someone through and guide them through, but I don't tell people what to do in that situation. It would be very, very rare for me to say, put that dog down. I mean, there's a couple dogs over the years where I can sort of think of clearly where it's like, no, there's something wrong with this dog. And usually those are the dogs where it's a medical condition, where you just, there's something not right. But that's sort of a different situation, because there's nothing you can do for that dog unless it's a treatable medical condition. But I think part of it is the pros and the cons and walking people through it and helping them decide what they are and aren't capable of doing and what they are and aren't capable of risking, and whether they can even execute and help the dog. You know, I think just it's an honest, hard, tough conversation that nobody likes having.
One of the things that I wonder about with, you know, with dogs who have inflicted serious damage, they don't have a bite, any bite inhibition, and are aggressive, like genuinely aggressive, and are being managed. Sometimes I wonder if there isn't a quality of life issue still behind a dog that has to be excessively managed.
That's a good point.
What would you kind of have to say about that?
Sure. I mean, it depends, again, on the family situation, what they have to offer the dog. But if you have a dog that, you know, can't go anywhere, can't get exercise, can't, I mean, going to the vet's a challenge. Everything's a challenge. Absolutely. And, I mean, you start thinking about even the level of stress. What does it do to somebody to be continuously stressed? If that's how bad it is that even, you know, resting at home is not comfortable for this dog. So I'd say there are situations when, yes, there's a quality of life issue. And is it fair to... You know, you have to kind of come at it from a position where you're saying, I'm going to make a decision that has nothing to do with me, even though I'm sort of central to the situation as an owner, right? Because, I mean, ultimately it's your decision, but it impacts so many others, and you're trying to put yourself in their situation to say, you know, am I doing what's right for as many people as possible, or am I doing this because someone's guilted me into making a decision one way or the other? And the guilt goes both ways. I mean, if you make the decision to put a dog down, you get guilted for being a dog killer. If you just, you know, work with the dog, you get guilted for being a potential child killer. It's one of those no-win sort of arguments going both ways.
Well, here's a question I have. I mean, this is one that I always wonder. There are dogs that if they got loose, they would kill somebody.
Yep.
And you know, the person who owns them, they have trouble controlling them, but they do their due diligence. I mean, the dog is always leashed. But I always wonder at what point that's fair to society to allow someone to keep a dog that if it ever gets loose, bad things will happen.
Right, and the argument people tend to make is I'm responsible, right? Because we tend to say, you know, I'm the owner, I'm responsible, I'm doing everything that's right. And, I mean, I have seen it happen where someone is a very responsible person, but, you know, the meter reader comes and
right.
It doesn't latch the gate.
Right, exactly.
And then bad things happen.
Yep.
And it isn't even a matter of somebody was, you know, negligent and irresponsible.
No, not.
It was one of the core questions
of should you keep a dog? Should a person keep a dog, manage a dog, that they know if it gets out, it could kill somebody?
I have a hard time justifying that. I mean, I really do.
I've seen some dogs walking that I look at him, and I see the guys holding him, and I'm thinking, if that dog ever gets loose, bad things are going to happen. You just know it. By the way the dog looks, the way it goes, carries, it's aggressive, and he's big, and he's going to do a lot of damage. And so I think there are a lot of people that have those kinds of dogs, and they're saying to themselves, well, as long as I manage this, it's okay.
Yeah, they do say that, absolutely. And I just... Well, I mean, I hate this topic because it's so, I mean, somebody's always going to say, yeah, but. And it's interesting because it's coming off a week when there was a high-profile TV dog trainer getting sued with that notion of, well, if you just, I love those words,
right.
If you just did this, if you just did that, you know, you could cure the dog. Those words are so, it's such a complicated situation.
It is, absolutely. But
I think this is also, like, you know, we're talking, I mean, a lot of your stuff has to do with breed bans. And, you know, ultimately I think a lot of people are for breed bans, and they think that if you're not, that you're anti-safety in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
And I don't think that's the thing. I think that it comes down to if a dog is truly a danger to society and there's reason to believe that this dog will do somebody harm, you know, does anybody really truly want to be saying, yes, this is what we want in our communities? And I think the answer is no. It just does so much harm in so many different levels.
All right, well, let's we got 30 seconds left, so we have to get off this depressing topic.
Okay.
Let's have some good weather this week. Let's have everybody...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring everybody down.
Yeah, it's all your fault, Chris. I think it's an interesting philosophical question. I don't know the answer. I don't know if there's a right answer. There are people that have had these dogs that have never gotten out, so, you know, great for them. But in any case, that's not what this show is about. It's about happiness, love, togetherness, pit bulls, and tune in next week for another exciting edition of Pit Bull Legal News Radio. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.